Okay. Last year's snow highway option, it's behind us. We didn't release any episodes.
Yeah, we didn't have one.
Forget about it. God knows I'm going to try. Look, I know you're just our listeners, and we're really here to tell you about the soundtrack, the Peter Panda dance, and all that crap. But I am so tired of looking at that pacifier Rotten Tomatoes score and seeing 21 and 58%.
Line up, Dad.
Sorry. History is made by men. Bald men. Vin Diesel. Now let's get out there and talk about Jack Frost. Our way. No highway option.
Okay. Good job.
Bald man, I love that.
Yeah, you said the bald man thing, and I was like, I feel excluded. This is rude. I don't
great.
Like this at all.
I needed the cadence of the three things, and we needed to build to Vin Diesel.
I don't like it at all. But yeah, this is No Highway Option. Cinema podcast. One question applies to every film. Better or worse than Vin Diesel's 2005 seminal masterpiece, The Pacifier. I'm Connor. I'm one of your hosts. And I would gift my son a magic... Why I suddenly forgot the name. So I'll just say Vuvuzela. That wasn't in my head, but that's what it's going to be. A magic Vuvuzela. You'll know I'm coming back to life because the kid will be in his room just going for hours.
And you would have it in like a big
case. Like yes, a case.
Like a Vuvuzela case.
Yeah.
You would have to leave the room and get that. That would have to be propped up against.
I could hide it up my back like I'm a kid with bad posture with a broom pole in his shirt.
I guess I'm talking a lot of shit for somebody who's about to say a trombone. I'm your other host, Luke.
Similar size case.
And we have a guest with us today.
Oh, you didn't have anything after the word trombone?
No, that was really it. Trombone.
I was waiting for you guys.
Yeah.
We have a guest with us today. Would you like to introduce yourself? Tell us your instrument.
Yeah. I am John Dorsey, and my instrument that I would play would be the out-of-tune ukulele that my toddler pulls out all the time.
There you go. And in case you couldn't tell by that, the movie we're discussing today is the 1998 family comedy version of Jack Frost. Fun fact, John was actually on to talk about the other Jack Frost when we watched it for the first time. So it's a fun little series we got going on. If we ever cover the 1979 Rankin Bass special, then I guess that's
when
we'll ask you back.
I was just going to say, I was caught by surprise to even be on this. And the fact that it's the sequel episode to the one that I recorded before, which is one, awesome, and two, how dare you make me watch this movie?
I mean, this was given to us by our roommate and past guest, Chris Banicki, who only assigned us it, I found out today, because he wanted to watch it with us.
Oh, well, I said we blew that one. Yeah, I watched it on the ferry.
I said something about watching it this morning in order to prepare for tonight, and he was like, what do you mean you already watched it? We were all supposed to watch it together, and I was supposed to have fun. And I was like, ah, well, we didn't, you didn't, and I didn't.
See, I was surprised by how much I liked it.
This is nothing.
I remembered, thinking it sucked as a kid, and I think looking back, it's because of how weirdly sad it is a lot of the time.
I mean, yeah, it's sad a lot because, you know, Michael Keaton dies and they for a year just grieve him until suddenly he comes back. But it's just the 90s dad work too hard, magic cap'n, love kid. It's the same shit.
Like, he does not work too hard. That's another thing I remembered. Like, I really remembered that plot. And, he doesn't even want to go to that concert. His wife convinces him.
He leaves to work hard and then turns around and dies.
Yeah, it's, watching this movie, I definitely was thinking the entire time, is this the version of the movie with all its interesting parts sanded off, and it's just this perfect round thing that they sort of handed to the actors, please would you make this? And in case you haven't watched this movie, in which case congratulations, don't.
Yeah.
But you know, it's basically what it's like Frosty the Snowman.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just that. It's guy who's musician's too hard, dies, comes back to you know, raise his son, does it, dies again, right? Like
that's the movie in a nutshell. That's 100 minutes distilled into 20 seconds. It's, well, this actually did start life as a Frosty the Snowman straight adaptation, apparently.
And this is slightly more of a Christmas thing than Frosty, which is, I stand by, not.
Santa this Claus also is not. At the end of Frosty. Santa Claus is in Frosty, it's a Christmas thing, but anyway.
Yeah, but Santa Claus is at the end of all kinds of stuff.
All kinds of Christmas stuff.
It's other stuff that isn't Christmas stuff as well.
Name one.
What's the Frosty New Year is not a Christmas one.
Rudolph Santa Shining in that?
Yeah.
Well, Rudolph and Frosty's Christmas in July.
I think that Santa is in, well, he's not in this movie, but Santa is in some movies in the way that, like, something is on a shelf or something is in a room. And, like, Christmas is in this movie the way that something that, like, there's a picture in this room that's also here.
Yeah, this is really just, I don't know, we called it Snow Highway Option. This is a snow movie.
Yeah.
He plays Christmas songs. They like Christmas. But, like, the soundtrack isn't even that Christmassy. Like, it's got Landslide on it. That's not really a Christmas song. It just says Snow-Covered Hill.
The soundtrack, and this is, we're jumping pretty far ahead here, but the soundtrack is, like, good, I thought.
Yeah, it's solid, but this,
I mean, it is a soundtrack. I wouldn't necessarily call it bad, but I wouldn't call it good. You know,
solid enough to, like, there wasn't anything that made me go ew. And when Landslide started, I was like, well, this is just a good song.
There was enough needle drop that, like, I have heard a lot worse soundtracks.
Well, yeah, especially with doing the show, but. Yeah. This did start life as a Frosty adaptation with a very strange different pairing of actor and director. George Clooney was originally set to play Jack Frost himself, which you can kind of see in the puppet design because Jim Henson's Creature Shop made the puppet to be modeled after George Clooney's face, and then he quit. So they went, fuck. And threw in Michael Keaton and, like, gave him little eyebrows to, like, kind of make it look more like him.
I don't know if it's close enough that, like, they had to worry.
It's one of those things that after I found it out, I see it more.
It's one of those things that once you've been told about it, you can't unsee it, mm-hmm. right? It's gonna be there in your peripheral vision the entire time.
And the director was almost Sam Raimi.
Which would have been awesome, right? Like, could you imagine this movie by Sam Raimi? Like,
it would have looked fascinating.
It would have looked fascinating. It would have, because, so, especially with how this movie looks, it feels like five different movies throughout the entire thing. And it's essentially whoever whatever character we're following as, like, the A character of a mm-hmm. scene. That's what that movie feels like, because, like, the entire movie begins on a concert with Jack Frost. It's you know, it's Michael Keaton. He's rocking out. He's being awesome. You've got
with a crowd who is way too into a blues version of Frosty the Snowman.
Right. Like, super into Frosty the Snowman. Mark Addy is his keyboard player, and then we see the rest of the band, which, like, is not the band in the car that appears later in the movie. Like,
I don't think I noticed. You know,
I might be speaking were they going for like a Dave Matthews Band?
I think so, yeah.
That's what I thought.
Which, like, 98, right. It makes sense that that's considered popular for it, so, like.
Right. And, like, they were like, this is gonna be popular forever. This is gonna be so cool. It has the scene of the guy, like, calling on a cell phone of, like, hey, listen to this.
Yeah, a shortened version of the Back to the Future joke. Everyone's cheering. Like, there's a chubby young Paul F. Tompkins in the crowd going, "You rock, man!" very loudly, which I found hilarious.
Oh, God. Yeah, that is Paul F. Tompkins.
Mm-hmm. I had to rewind it like three times.
So you go to, you know, you have this beautiful opening scene. You're like, oh, I guess this movie might have a little bit of darkness into it. And then it follows a kid. It follows his son in like a Saving Private Ryan, you know, opening scene against the mean bully where they all have like a snowball fight. And like, I remember, you know, I watched this over two nights, and when I was sitting watching, I was like, what in the hell is happening right now?
It is weird because, like, it's all over the place. It does the snowball fight scene. It has, like, war, like, bomb whistling noises and, like, does that to make it really heightened and silly. And then the rest of the movie doesn't do that except for, like, a few snowman shenanigans.
They seemed like real kids, I'll say that. That when they came back to try and do a snowball fight a second time, and he was like, I don't want him, my dad's dead. And they were like, he's not fun anymore.
He's not fun to pick on anymore since his dad died.
I was like,
died.
I mean, this some of those kids are brutal.
One, yes, you're totally right. After that moment happens, you're like, Jesus Christ, what is wrong with this movie? But before that, we meet his mom. Right. And his mom's played by Kelly Preston as like the most DTF like mom in a movie ever. Like,
yeah,
she not with her son, thank God. But like as soon as Jack Frost, like she's Gabby Frost. As soon as Jack Frost like shows up, all of their scenes have this weird like just sort of like, hey, we're spending time here doing this before we're going to start. Am I allowed to swear on this?
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. We're going to be fucking later. Right. And like the kids looking onto this was like, oh, look at my parents as they're like very directly saying they're going to have sex. Like the moment he goes down.
Yeah.
Enough that it could have been like an off-screen chemistry thing.
It's definitely possible. There was one scene where they like lingered on Michael Keaton being on top of her for long enough where I was just like, this is PG, right? Like, is this PG-13 and they're like implying a sex scene, but
full-blown sex scene.
Yeah,
just random, but it was all dim, so it's still PG.
Very weird.
You can tell that there was like there was another chemistry there because it certainly wasn't Michael Keaton singing.
I mean, he hit
when he has the band. Sure, you can shuffle through it.
Yeah.
When they made him do it without any music as like a mean prank, like why did they set him up to do that? And I don't know, like they set
romance.
This movie up. I don't know that George Clooney would have been any more successful.
I don't know if I've ever heard George Clooney sing.
No, that's the way he wants it.
What is a conspiracy?
I hesitate to say like anybody would be doing like do a good job in this movie because, you know, it's kind of pushed through. Right. Like,
I mean,
he goes home. We see his family. Great relationship with his family, you know, always takes on work. But, you know, Connor, you pointed out like they like it's at the bidding of his wife.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then he gets a call for this job and he's like, oh, I'm going to go do this. And she's like, yeah, it's going to be fine. It's going to be great. And winds up going, doesn't want to, turns back, gets into a car accident, dies. Right. Like, and up until this point, there's like no conflict in the movie. Like this movie is just.
There's not even any conflict with that moment because while they're driving to go meet the record label or whatever, I think he specifically said at Asylum Records, which was a okay, whatever.
It was at the guy's party.
But as he was driving up, he was like, I don't know if I want to do this. I'm going to miss Christmas, Michael Keaton, blah, blah, blah. And the keyboard's like, yeah, I don't want to go either. And then they turn around to the band and they're like, we're not going to go. And the band's like, we didn't want to go either. I'm like, why didn't anyone say anything? No one, like, yeah, everyone's just conflict averse in this Hallmark card style world.
And, but, like, you know, think about it. Like, oh, he needs to go. And then, like, car breaks down. He's like, I'm still, you know, I'm going to show up, right? And, like, he goes and he gets in a car accident. Like, something. Like, have people make choices that make them, you know, not bad, but not necessarily good.
Complicated.
Yeah.
Complicated, people. Right? And, like...
Because
instead he just dies. he just dies and then it's
throughout the entire story there's no villain. Like the bully kid Rory Birch, I think his name was Rory Buck, he's like, you know, a classic 90s bully who spends too much money on hair gel. But then the second he finds out that Michael Keaton is a snowman dad, he's like, ah, sweet, I don't have a dad, but like, let's make sure your dad's alive. Like the
Snow
only
dad
villain
is better than no dad.
Yes,
is the
no
line.
Dad is better than no dad. The only villain in this movie is the sun, the ball of gas in the sky that makes things too warm that will melt the snowman. Everyone else, the hockey coach, is just a whoa. That's a snowman.
Hockey like, coach is great.
I'm sorry. Are you talking about Henry Rollins, famous rock star? That hockey coach?
Yes, the one.
Which is, like, the only moment I had of, like, getting up off the couch in this movie. Like, holy shit, Henry
By
Rollins.
God, that's Henry and Rollins music. Like,
yeah, he's in it for, like, three more scenes. They got him for, like, 2 days, and that was it.
This whole thing is weird.
Listen, that speech was great. As you could tell, I loved it.
Yeah, I could tell. The whole thing's weird, but I will admit... The puppet's good. I think the puppet's really impressive when you can tell it's like being operated by people and not janky 90s CG.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, anything that's like in camera, like looks excellent in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, the main house, like that was on a soundstage.
Oh, of course.
And also, you know, there's a like little hangout spot that they go to later on in the movie.
Yeah.
That's very obviously a soundstage. But the problem is that very little effort is made to like make that look the same as real life.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes like you like especially watching this on my, you know, 56 inch, you know, living room television and 4K, whatever. And just like that is just a wall, you know, that is just a wall that's been painted to look like you're going into the distance.
It's I don't think they ever envisioned people watching this in super high def or whatever. Like, I don't know if when they at least released this, like not while they were making it, I'm sure while they were making it, they weren't going, this is going to fucking suck. But I'm pretty sure as they released it, they were like, just get it out, please. We don't want to worry about this, considering... So many movies get some type of like special anniversary Blu-ray or like recognition on social media for it being its 25th anniversary. This is the 25th anniversary of Jack Frost this year, and we're the only ones doing anything about it, it seems.
I think visually the worst culprit of that, like some scenes, the scenes on the soundstage look good and the other scenes are terrible, is when they are in the cabin and the sun rises to like a crayon drawn sky.
Mm-hmm. It's anything that has to do with like compositing looks bad. The sled sequence looks like an old timey 50s movie where they're moving the background behind a stationary actor.
Right. And like throwing snow at him. Mm-hmm. Like also whenever he goes up, whenever there's like a matte painting behind him and you can tell that they had to like do early green screen to like cut him out of the scene. And like, you know, sure, it made it look neat, but we didn't really need it, right? Like we didn't really need that shot.
And it's,
they're like, good Lord, we've spent the money.
We're doing this
goddamn movie.
It's one of those things where like, I guess you have to put yourself in the like mindset of 1998, but did this even look that good CGI wise then?
I think the fact that it's a snowman in Denver did it some favors, not to make it look exceptional, but there are times where if it wasn't white CGI on top of white background, it would have probably looked even worse.
The ice skating sequence, when they're in the little hideaway, that looks like kind of nice, but also kind of a Christmas overlay for a Bass Pro Shop. It like, he like skates by the camera at one point, and I audibly went, ugh. It looked rough. He got too close. Especially for the CG was done by Industrial Light and Magic, which are like the guys.
Was it done by Light and Magic?
Apparently.
I don't know. I don't know, because everything about this movie screams, let's make this as palatable to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everybody everywhere, right? That's why, like, it seems like so many different movies. Like, the Mark Addy, right? He plays Mac MacArthur. He's the keyboard player.
Nice guy.
Like, right, he's the only person who was playing this movie, like, as the director intended, right? He showed up and it was like, hey, how do you want me to do this? And it's just like, I'm just a dumb piano player who's not really on board all the time. I'm here just to like be a mentor figure to the kid. Great, got it. Yeah. And they're like, do you want any more direction? He was like, absolutely not. Never look at me again. And everyone else like came into it with, well, you know, I kind of want to give him this. And then they were like, well, I don't know. I don't really quite see it like that. And it's like, don't worry.
We'll figure it out.
Like this. I swear to God. And then, you know, 4 hours goes by and they're just like, all right, we're on to the next scene. Fuck it. We got to keep going.
This does feel like a three takes. We're running out of budget. Like, we need to give the puppeteers a break. Fuck it. Move on.
Yeah.
Type thing. And I swear, and like, I definitely watched this once or twice as a kid and like never really stuck with me. I had the novelization as like a random book fair book. I might have won it in a contest or something. I swear I remember the keyboard player hooking up with the mom. I swear I remember him being like the boyfriend.
It's like
after the death.
Soft implied that that's where they end.
I don't know. I feel like
they're all in the same house together.
I feel like he's just like the buddy.
Yeah, I think that they wanted to imply it, but they didn't. They ran out of track. They didn't write it.
But they couldn't commit to anything,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like, that would be so much more. Like, that would be so interesting.
There would be conflict.
There would be conflict. It would be complicated. Like,
the kid could have feelings about it.
The kid could have feelings about
snowman.
It. He could have to, you know, he approves it, right? And they're like together and they have to accept this. And like, no, like even at the end of the movie, like just to skip ahead, you know, the plot, I'm sorry, it's just because there's really no plot to this movie other than guy comes back from being dead and then just is like, great, I've taught you how to do a trick shot. I will die again.
Yeah.
You're going to be a great man.
We spend time together and now you're confident. Let me look at your mom for 10 seconds, sing a song poorly, and dip.
He sees like at the end when everybody could have had this moment of like, oh my God, you're back. And he's like, yeah, I'm dying now. And then it just goes to her seeing him and him being like, you're still hot, baby. And
yeah.
Like, and then, you know, in the car.
The emotional equivalent of later skater. Like,
right. And like, Mac is in the car. He's in the car,
right,
like, listening to the fucking radio. And he's just like.
The radio station with the weirdest tagline of, we only play 90s and 70s music. Fuck the 60s and fuck the 80s. They say that very quickly.
Yeah. Say that?
They don't say fuck, but they're like, we play music from the 70s
absolutely
and
90s.
No, nothing
60s.
From the 60s, nothing from the 80s. And that stuck with me the whole time.
It was.
Why?
Yeah. But I think you can tell that they didn't. Either they had one idea for Mac and they just like didn't do any more with it, or they really just had nothing. They really just wanted him to like be nearby. And it's that scene. It's that, like, I was expecting him to also walk over the hill and,
oh my God, that's my friend.
Yeah. And for him, for Michael Keaton to say something to him, you know, just anything, just like, hey, you are my pal, you know, like anything. It's something to mirror.
You are my friend, but you are a snowman.
It would have been better than nothing. I don't know. It's something to mirror the scene where Mac is at the festival with the kid and he's like talking about how he misses him. And the kid was like, oh man, he was your best friend, huh?
Mm-hmm.
And like, that was it. Also, Mark Addy is, the guy from Knight's Tale and Still Standing, that time I'm like, that guy, and I couldn't think, it's him.
Right.
Throwback.
Dude, he's Robert Baratheon. He's the king of the First Men. Like, like that was his last big role, was like the king from season one of Game of Thrones. Spoilers, I guess. Get over it. Like, it's so old at this point.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe if I get through an episode without falling asleep, maybe I'll be excited to see it. I've tried watching it twice, and both times I've fallen asleep.
Maybe you should read the books. Maybe you should read them three times at this point.
That's a lot.
I know. I've read them too much. I've given up. I don't think he's ever going to finish them.
I never give it a shot.
You know, sidebar. The TV show, great up until the point where they run out of material, right? And then it just becomes very quickly, like, it just turns into trash because they were trying to get out to become, you know, do their like Star Wars prequel
movie, never happened,
which never happened,
canceled. And then they try to do a thing at HBO where it was like, what if the Confederacy won?
They did. They the show was approved. It was called Confederate.
Yeah.
And everybody went, ooh,
don't do that.
That's not great. And then that was very quickly canceled. But the books are great. You just have to read them, which just takes so goddamn long.
They're big, chunky guys.
The Confederacy show it's the same people, or it's set in the Game of Thrones.
It's the main showrunners of the last couple seasons of Game of Thrones.
Right.
Benioff.
It was the showrunners for the entire thing.
Benioff and D.B. Weiss or something?
Yeah. And it was going to be their next big show for HBO, and then that died. And then everybody was sort of expecting at the end of Game of Thrones, like, oh, these guys are going to be conquering heroes. They've finished the story that has never gotten finished. And then they turned in their end, which is not good. And just everybody very quickly was like, just get away. Just move on.
They
like,
were part
I don't know
of the
if you watch.
String of directors that Kathleen Kennedy was like, here's a bunch of Star Wars trilogies that you can do. And then as they started getting scripts and stuff, they went, maybe not.
Yeah. Yeah. Man. How much hope was there in the world 10 years ago?
Remember when Star Wars made movies?
Yeah. Yeah. You might get more. You might.
I hope so. I like them.
Yeah.
I don't like all of them, but I like them.
Yeah.
I'm watching.
So this piece of...
Anyway.
So this piece of garbage.
speaking of Star Wars, ILM, that's how it gets tied together.
Yeah, ILM. But, this fucking movie.
It's...
this is...
Yeah, it's one of those things where
it's hard to describe.
It's hard to describe because not too much happens. He's a snowman. He does snowman shenanigans. There's a cute dog. He says, "Don't piss on me, dog."
It does.
The voice of TJ Detweiler from Recess says, "Why don't you want to play hockey with us anymore?"
Is that who that was?
Yeah. He was also in that Disney Channel movie, The Other Me, where he makes a clone. His name's Andy Lawrence, or Andrew Lawrence.
I'm looking this up.
I saw his face, and I was like, that kid was on Disney Channel. I remember those
Andrew
two things well.
Lawrence. Oh, my God. Yeah, he's the voice of TJ Detweiler in Recess. Wow.
He was also in Battlefield 4. He was Iggy in Money Plane.
I'm sorry, Battlefield 4?
He was Clayton Pak-Pikowski.
Is that the...
Is that the lead? Oh.
I don't know. I have never played a Battlefield game.
I started 5.
You don't need to. I don't think you need to start that up.
He played Brian in a Fast and Furious video game.
Full circle.
There you go. We didn't play any of the video games for the Fast-a-thon when we did it. That would have taken true. Too much time.
You don't need to handle that.
It would be a fun change of pace.
Tree bears no fruit.
Yeah, but the plot is, it's your standard magic thing happens to busy dad scenario. Like, I don't, if you ever seen the Adult Swim infomercial Cool Dad, where it's like, dad never had time for his kids. The kid wished he would turn into something. And it like does that over and over. It's like a dog, a tree. He can't lie. Nonsense like that. But like, that's what this is. Except it just, I don't know.
Just for like 10 times the amount of time?
Yeah, for 10 times the amount of time. And they saw that Campbell's Soup commercial beforehand and went, what if that but man?
I always, in my childhood, associated it with the Nestle commercial.
Mm.
And then I feel like every time I got close to it, I was like, these are not the same.
Yeah.
The Nestle thing is actually a lot closer to the other Jack Frost. He melts into a skeleton.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so you mentioned seeing, well, one, you said you saw this like 3 times as a kid, which number one, like, way to go.
Maybe just like flipping around, it was on Cartoon Network and I'd stop and be like, oh, look, movie.
See, I don't remember a number of times. I know that I have seen it before.
Because I remember this, and this actually goes back to the last episode I was on with you guys, where I would see the Jack Frost 1997 movie
just
with,
one
like,
year before
the
this.
Holographic cover,
mm-hmm.
And then I would see Jack Frost, the like, PG, like really G movie, like right next to it, right? And this had to make its money on the back end, because I remember all throughout, like, just going into a store and seeing this on the shelves. Maybe it was because they printed a billion of them and they just had a ton of DVDs.
Yeah.
Or somebody was making money off of it.
I feel like it's a combination. This did not do well. The budget, I mean, it's, Wikipedia says it's between $40 and $85 million, which, like,
that means it's 85.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it made $34.5 million during its theatrical release.
Woof.
Not good. It opened in third place on its opening weekend with $7 million, behind Star Trek Insurrection and Bug's Life.
Oh, wow.
So I was at the movies that weekend, but not to see this.
Yeah, no, I was seeing Bug's Life.
Yeah.
You remember being at the movies on a weekend in 1997?
98, first off. But it's because in my head, one of two movies, it was either A Bug's Life or Tarzan was my first movie I remember seeing in a theater.
Gotcha.
And I always struggle to remember which. I feel like it...
How old are you?
28.
28,
okay. Because I was 10 when this came out. And I don't remember this being in movie theaters at all.
Yeah.
I remember like a time frame, but I don't remember this being, it's the same way, like, I know conceptually that I saw Stuart Little in a movie theater.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't remember that.
You can't name when, right?
Yeah. I don't remember like the exact date or like time. I just remember it was one of those two, because I have memories of seeing them in a theater, and the trailer for Toy Story 2 was before them, like the little teaser. And as a 3-year-old, I was like, holy shit, 2? There are going to be more?
they can make sequels to these movies?
Yeah, and like that teaser is Buzz and Woody directly addressing the audience, being like, it's good to be back, everybody. And I'm like, I'm happy you're back. Much better film than this.
Yeah, yeah. But like, I don't know. This movie had like a vibe to it. Like, I didn't mind it, right? You mentioned Hallmark before, which, like, you know, I can't remember if my wife had had her child, our child. I'm gonna go with our child. But when she was pregnant and leading up to her pregnancy, we were both just like so nervous and just racked with like, oh my god, what could happen, that we watched Hallmark movies all the time, which, you know, are exactly what you think they are. Mm-hmm. Like, there's nothing, there's no hard edges on them. The hard edges that are there are made out of styrofoam so that you don't get hurt, and they end, right? They all blend together, none of them make sense, and this kind of had that vibe. You know, it's a movie for the sake of being a movie. They just so happened to spend almost like $100 million on it, which, yeah, like, what the fuck? Where did that money go?
People, that's gotta be, hated the design of the puppet.
I mean, money had to have gone to that. Yeah, that's a big ticket item. And then Michael Keaton took a big check.
Mm-hmm.
But who knows who knows where these things go, especially on a movie like this, when you look it up on Wikipedia and you're like, oh, I'm gonna find out all the secret jam about this movie, and then you look it up and it has nothing, and you're
it's very basic,
that the actual secretness of this movie is like too spicy that they can't like put it out there,
right?
I would be interested to hear more about this movie from people who were involved.
A tell-all.
Just, you know,
absolutely.
Like, yeah.
Michael Keaton, if you're ever bored.
Well, not even just that, like on the back end, like what was the shoot like? What, like, how much time were you there?
Was Michael Keaton ever on set? Besides, like, besides his beginning and end, but like,
yeah,
the fuck snowman no. scene.
Hell no. I'm telling you, as a guy that works on movies right now, no, absolutely not. That dude, he came in, he rocked and rolled for like a week or two, and they shot like all, like, I'm willing to bet that his shit was shot like right at the beginning.
Oh yeah.
So that whatever they had, like, they had with him, and then, you know, he was like, goodbye, I'll see you in recording, I'll see you in post. And like,
yeah,
everything mm-hmm. else was just, wait, what is this guy's name? Bruce Linole as Jack Frost in Suit Performer, Denise Cheshire as Jack Frost, Alan Troutman as Jack Frost. Like, that's it. It was, mm-hmm. it was those guys with whatever high pitched, you know, Darth Vader voice they were, you know, using with him.
Man, they're really,
because if,
and that's
they,
like the B team for a lot of Henson puppeteers at this point.
If they had shot a second version of anything, I don't think that you would leave that ending. Why does he fades away into dust and he's like, you are still hot, and like, I just, that's so that's, I'm almost out of place.
I get that, huh?
You know, I've been working in the movie industry for 12 years now. By the way, I work in the movie industry. I do props. Hello. And I have never seen something that ended on kind of like, ended on such a, like a terrible note as this, but I've seen stuff end pretty terribly in my career. Like, movies that look like they were coming together and at the end they just like crash.
Mm.
And it's just, you're putting something together, you convince people to give you money, and then you have all this money, and then like the second you have the money in your hand, like the clock starts, the train starts up,
and
as much
it.
As you think as it's like a director and a writer and a producer, like they're all going to be on the same page, like God forbid they're not, and it's just it's gonna wind up and it's gonna be bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I feel like the very end of this movie isn't even like a bad ending. It's just like a "you're still here" ending. It's like, oh, you're still watching this. Here's like a little more live action Michael Keaton. Thanks for coming.
Here's a little bit more of him. It's still snowing, even though they showed it wasn't snowing anymore.
Hey, remember the dog? We're gonna do the dog for a little bit. We like the dog, right? And it's a cute dog.
And then it ends, right? Like, why does Max start playing music again? Like, why is he touching the piano? He didn't have his moment. I guess like he had a moment of being in the car and Gabby and Charlie Frost come in, they're sobbing, and then he's like, what happened with you? Yeah. And they're like, we saw Jack. And he was like, what? Jack was here?
Guess I'll play the piano again.
He was the snowman. He was like, what the fuck?
Did he say anything about me?
Yeah, it was like, not a goddamn word, you know?
We were the two most important people in his life. And also my hockey coach he liked to fuck with.
Yeah, no, you mentioned that. The only people that know that he's alive are Sid, who's Henry Rollins,
mm-hmm.
Kelly, and Charlie, and then Taylor, or the Rory Buck, right? Yeah. Like the bully.
Rory and Buck finds it. Out, doesn't think another second about it. He just goes, cool.
He's like, I knew that was your dad. Anyways, I'm going to help you now.
Yeah, I'm going to kill you. This snowman is my dad. Ah, oh, he threw a bunch of snowballs at me. Way cool.
Stupider is a word.
That's what he gives him shit about.
It is what he gives him shit about.
I don't know what stupider. You are the snowman. Who the fuck says stupider on Michael Keaton?
Yeah, Michael Keaton tells him that's not a word, which is like a hilarious prank if he's doing it to like, just fuck with that kid. Like,
that belongs to a version of this movie that does not exist.
Yeah. Also, the kid is 12 years old, and sometimes they talk to him like he's 4. Like, he says, he says something about being worried that the snowman's gonna melt, and the mom's like, oh, Charlie, snowman melt. And it's like, you should know that. You are 12.
Yeah, you know, that goes down to movie writing.
Yeah.
Of, like, you know, somebody wrote it and like he was much younger, and then they have to cast a kid and all the 8-year-olds like can't read, you know, or they're just like growing in between, like, all right, we cast an 8-year-old, and then they look back and he looks 10 and they're like, all right, we're casting a 10-year-old. Fuck it.
That's a hard age.
It is.
It's there's a reason why you don't see like a 4-year-old in a movie, right? Unless they're like at a dinner table and that's it, right?
Mm-hmm. Unless someone's telling them to go easy on the Pepsi,
right, and like that's all you get. There's no 6-year-old, there's no, like, on a TV show where they can age in real time, mm-hmm. Sure, we can do that. Otherwise, everybody's like, fuck that. It's the reason why every teenager you see on screen is like 27.
Yeah,
right, because the actual ones are still full of hormones. And 2, like, can't act, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, and if you need them for a while, there's no consistency to it. They could show up tomorrow and look, maybe not tomorrow, but effectively tomorrow and look completely different.
And I mean, and child labor laws.
I mean, I guess your 27-year-old could hit that barrier, but they've got a couple more years of looking like they look, exactly as they look.
Yeah.
The moment when he skitters across the hot pavement, suddenly he's saying the weirdest shit. Did any of you catch some of Jack Frost's lines as he's going across
the hot pavement?
Like hoppin' habanero or leapin' Lawrence of Arabia?
Every single thing he says about his butt is a line from the trailer. A
lot of butt stuff. A lot of stuff about him being like, boy, I hate being a snowman, but I've got this fat ass that is great. It's so helpful.
There's not a lot that you can use. Like, there's only so much language that you can use in the movie, especially when you're casting, like, Michael Keaton.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Which is
not
like
the most child-friendly comedian.
like, how, when was this and when was Batman? Right?
9 years apart.
Was it that
long? It was 9 years apart.
Well, Batman's 89 and this is 98, so.
Oh, wow.
Oh. Well, shit.
That's math. Like, I don't know what to tell you. It's, yeah, I don't know. It's weird. And there's only so much you can do with being a snowman. Like, I don't know. He splits apart. Sometimes extra snow is put on him. Sometimes he loses snow. He is round. What else is there comedically of, now I'm a snowman, I can do this?
Well, they, you know, they were making this movie for kids.
Yeah.
Like, say what you will about this movie. This movie was aimed at, like 13 and under. Mm-hmm. You know? That it was trying to motivate those same people to get to the theater, which I guess they motivate their parents to take them because, you know, they don't have cars. And my computer keeps on making noises at me. Stop it. No, I'm like that. That should be praised, right? Like, the only problem is that you also mentioned Pixar put out a movie that year, which was excellent and essentially Seven Samurai for children.
Yeah.
And like, you know, but A Bug's Life is an excellent movie and like full of very funny gags.
Seven Samurai for children or The Three Amigos for children.
Right, and like, this movie was not really made for anyone. Like, it kind of felt like the people who were making this had a couple scenes in their mind, and they were like, these are the scenes we're going to have fun on. And then the scenes where they were talking to each other came up, and they were like, shit.
Yeah, not as fun. Like,
yeah, this could have been a fine TV special. Maybe, but like,
yeah, there's no reason for this movie not to exist.
Yeah, the just extra hour, or like, even if it was like a 45-minute little special that had an hour time slot, could have been like, oh, this is neat, this is cute, this is fine, forgettable, whatever. But adding it on and stretching it out, it just became like, oh, okay, we're still here.
There's like a sweet spot of what you want to hit with this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the Grinch is a couple of years away from this.
Also sucks.
And you know, love it or hate it, you remember it.
Mm-hmm.
It took a swing.
I remember at least the snowman of this. That has stuck in my head.
Right. But you don't, the rest of it, not as much, because there aren't as many, I don't know, like, choices.
It's generic.
I gotta
be honest, I can't think of what I watched this yesterday. I can't think of like when things in the story happen.
It's just like an amorphous blob of plot points.
It is he's alive, he's dead, here's the end, and everything else is just like, it's just like a giant question mark of just like, okay, so he dies, right? He, you know, selfish musician dies. It's a year. His kid comes back, calls him with the whistle, with a magical, so there's a magical, what is it? Harmonica. There's a magical harmonica, which like they really pumped up in the trailers of like, man, this thing is going to be so important. He uses it once.
Yeah.
Brings him back.
And the whole thing with it being magic is Michael Keaton makes up a bullshit story of like, I got this magic harmonica from a 9-foot-tall blues player named, it's a stupid name that I wrote down because I found it kind of funny, Sonny Boy Wayne. And right, Sonny Boy Wayne was magic. And then at one point they have an argument, and he's like, I didn't ask to be bought back from the dead. You used the magic harmonica. And the kid's like, I thought you made that up. He's like, yeah, maybe I did, but I'm here. And then at the end, he's like, I know why I came back. It's because you played the harmonica. And it's like, yeah, we established that 20 minutes ago.
Like, there's a version of this movie where he comes back and he's like, I don't want to be alive, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, I purely want to die. Let me die, right? And his kid is like, I want you to die. And then he's just like, he can't die. And he's like, great, we're stuck together. Let's figure this out. And they like, you know, they
Groundhog
go through,
Day their way through it.
Yeah.
Right. They like figure out some adventures. He learns his, you know, Mac is macking on his wife and like all this other stuff and can still have the weird kid adventures, which like are really kind of what like 95% of the movie went into developing those moments and like making sure that they seemed cool and would be fun for kids, which is very weird. And then they had to end it, right? Like they could have tried to make that movie, but they like they went the complete opposite way. Like they Rise of Skywalker this movie before Rise of Skywalker ever came out.
Yeah. Also, does this movie not believe in an afterlife? I feel like when he's brought back to life, he's just like, oh, I'm home. And is never like, it has been a year, I have been dead, I've seen heaven or hell.
I mean, he acknowledges that he was dead, but there is a when he first shows up, there's a very much, you get the idea that like,
no time has passed for him.
He was there. Well, the time has passed, but that nothing was happening.
Yeah. Interesting.
You know, I think that, again, like, that just goes into, like, that's a part of a more interesting movie.
Right.
That they were, like, every bit like that. Like, everything that they had a question about. There's, like, has he died? And they're, like, no, we're not gonna deal with this.
Yes, but no, like, shut up.
Stop it.
There's another version of the script where the harmonica does more stuff. The kid blows into the harmonica and, like, other stuff in the house is coming to life. Or... the father is alive and the mother is turning into a snowman.
So like Luck of the Irish. There's the Sam Raimi version of this script probably opened with after the kid blows on the harmonica, the snowman is like, I have seen hell. I know the devil. He is my friend. Or, you know, Deadite.
You say
shit
that
happens.
And that movie would rule.
Yeah. I would say, what's Sam Raimi up to now? Let's get him back on the horn, but he might be doing like three more Marvel things. Anyway, do we have anything else to say before we move on to the criteria?
Just no. There's nothing. It is a movie that ends.
It is a movie that ends.
Yeah.
I would say that should be the title of the episode, but that's not very appealing, I don't think.
Yeah. Well, that's the reason why I chose it.
All right, criteria, we do it every week to compare this movie to The Pacifier. First up, we kind of discussed it. How's the soundtrack for the film, especially compared to the 2000s pop-punk fever dream of The Pacifier? It's okay.
I think this one beats The Pacifier for me.
It doesn't for me. It's close. Because of Landslide, but like, it's okay.
I like the needle drops. And also, I think the Dave Matthews thing got to me. Because that works for me.
Damn. Frosty the Snowman. he got you. I think the one that got me the most was Hey Hey Now. By Squirrel 360. I think it's the song that plays when he dies.
Mm-hmm.
Let me look this up. Hey now. Hey now, now, now. Hey now? Hey now, now.
Hey now, now. Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about.
Oh, no, that's a different one. I don't know, man. Like
one of them.
For a movie about music, you get one song by the band, that's it. You know, and then there's nothing
one
else
original
that you
song
ever
by
hear
the band.
By them.
And then again.
Wait,
Frosty the Snowman, he made out of snow, at the beginning.
You know what? There's two songs that are on there. It's also Have a Little Faith.
Oh,
I can't tell you what that song is.
They had to have been what they were playing before he was like, ah, here's a Christmas one for you.
Or, well, there's that, like, few seconds when they're in the studio. Is that it?
Yeah, one of those two things. It could be the same song both times.
I don't know, but...
I also thought I remembered their songs playing on the radio at some point in the movie, and that just did not happen.
It's mentioned, isn't it? Like, no. Don't we hear a radio DJ say something about, like, ah, oh, it's a local band. They've been doing their tape for a while, and, like, we really gotta push them through or something.
No, I think that's all the guy talking to him.
Oh, okay. I don't know, man. Is there anything in this film that's as memorable as the Pacifier's Peter Pan dance?
I mean, the Peter Panda dance of the first movie, which, by the way, I did not watch The Pacifier because that movie has been seared into my memory ever since I watched it on the first time.
That's the goal.
And no, but I will say the Saving Private Ryan moment in the beginning of the movie, that's like a pretty close fall. Because, you know, it has its musical start, and then it just goes straight into this, like, four kids, war drama. And you're like, what in the hell is happening in this movie? And it was sort of downhill from that moment on.
Mm-hmm.
But that, for me, that if I were going to bet on any moment of this movie, like, taking away somebody's breath, like, that would be it.
Yeah. For me, it's similar. It's the when, like, the stuff from the trailers that I remembered when I was young of just, like, wow, the snowman's throwing the snowballs really fast. Kids threw two snowballs at his chest, and he goes, I got boobs, and then gets rid of them. Like, that stuff is like, oh, yeah, that's what I remember when someone says Jack Frost.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of a cop-out answer, but the snowman itself...
Mm-hmm.
Is probably that for me.
As the Peter Panda dance?
Of, like, it's your, like, most memorable thing that sticks with you.
Like the...
All right.
Yeah. I guess the puppet
mm-hmm.
of the snowman itself.
Right. All right. I'll take that.
Who's your Brad Garrett, Carol Kane, memorable, bizarre, scene-stealing side character of the film?
And it's Sid. It's Henry Rollins, the hockey coach, who, like, you know, once again, in a completely different movie, like, plays it like he's like in a sex comedy. He's just like, what? No, I'm not going to be haunted by a snowman. Yeah. And, like,
what did I say about talking about snowmen in the car?
Yeah. And he's, like, peeking through his glasses. Like, it's very strange and weird.
Mm.
And
the fact that it's Henry, like, Rollins doesn't make it any less weird.
Well, but, like, his scenes, like, come alive. I would watch an entire, like, this movie from his point of view, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's been 25 years. That's enough time for a Lego sequel.
There was, when I was looking this movie up, there was a couple of, there's a couple of things about him. Like other Christmas movies that would be better with him in them, and, like, different lists like that.
Interesting. Yeah, mine is either Sid the Hockey Coach or young, chubby, featured extra Paul F. Tompkins, front and center for that opening scene.
Yeah, I need to check to see if the rental is still up on my machine, because I need to rewatch the opening just to be, oh, that's Paul.
Yeah, I'm totally not.
And then turn it off forever.
I'm totally not pulling up HBO Max now just to get to the one shot of him.
Yeah, I'd give it to Sid also. Mark Addy should be there, but there's not enough.
Yeah, he doesn't. He did exactly what they wanted him to do. Mm-hmm. They wanted a guy who is just, he's going to do the mentor stuff. He's going to throw, he's going to fall asleep when he's not supposed to. And he's going to wake up when it's, you know, not appropriate. And that's it. That's all he's going to do. And it's going to be perfect.
Yep.
But, you know, he was a welcome presence. I think I've seen every episode of Still Sanding, just about.
He's not a bad guy. And is there anything in this film that's as batshit insane as the Sound of Music subplot from The Pacifier, which, in case you don't remember, is the, well, you'll see when you watch the movie. Is there anything?
You mean the Hitler side plot?
Yeah.
The Hitler side plot from The Pacifier, easily the best part of that movie.
Is there anything as batshit insane as that?
There is.
Honestly, it's the fact that Sid knows that the snowman is alive and doesn't acknowledge it.
Doesn't do anything
right?
About
like,
it.
Like that is, it's like a John Cheever short story. I'm probably making like a wrong reference there, but like, you know, a hockey coach, there's a kid, dad's dead, creepy stuff. And now he's like talking to a snowman that you saw alive one night. Like, and just that keeps on coming up in his life. Like, again, what is this movie through his, like, from his view? Because it's got to be, like, creepy and terrible. And, like, that snowman is alive. And, like, he, like, reached that kid. But how? Like, how did this happen? Like, it's so strange.
It's very.
And awful. And, like, I since this movie has ended, I've thought about that version of, like, I don't know, a sidequel. Is that what that was called?
that would work.
And the whole town just
is chill with it. They're
just kind of,
like,
dumps on him about it.
Weird kid talking to the snowman, and then he's the one person that believes it.
Yeah.
For me, it's just the fact that this started life as a Sam Raimi, George Clooney movie. To go from Sam Raimi, a director who has such a massive, like, design thumbprint on most things, to this generic Hallmark nothingness, is nuts that it, like, changed like that.
You know, so this is some inside baseball for you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm willing to bet that what we saw of the movie is the movie that was like, that was the draft that was turned in to Sam Raimi.
Okay.
I don't think that, like, I could be wrong, you know, very easily. So, but, like, when these projects are getting put together, like, it's just me. It's, you know, it's like us talking on Zoom. It's
right.
It's whatever. And then all of a sudden somebody, you know, hands over a script and is like, did you like it? And you're like, no.
I did,
you
know? See, apparently, according to IMDb trivia, which is only so helpful, Sam and Ivan wrote a draft together. Sam Raimi and Ivan Raimi. So, but that also could have been one that was thrown out, and then they gave them this.
Yeah, or it could have been that. God, I would love to read that script.
Yeah, right. Oh, also, Darren Criss auditioned for the lead role of the kid.
How about Criss?
From Glee and Star Kid, and the Music Meister episode of The Flash. I don't know what else he's done. He was some, like, serial killer on an FX thing, American Crime Story, I think it was.
That's pretty cool.
I don't know. He's done stuff.
I guess the Sound of Music thing, is that snowball fight, the second one happens. And it's out in the open. It's not like the snowman is blocked off. Charlie is standing there, and the snowman is he's throwing snowballs, and a hill full of kids are looking up at that, and nobody's like, well, that was weird. Everybody's like, man, Charlie just kicked our ass.
Yeah. Nobody's commenting on him shouting, I'm a wizard with a blizzard.
There's a lot of, like, really strange moments like that in the movie that, you know, had somebody questioned it and, like, allowed them to chase that story down, it would, you know, we'd have like a much more entertaining movie. Mm. But man, they just, like, every one of those grapes, they just let's die.
They just said no.
Yeah, especially so many times when you see Charlie talking to the snowman, they make it just the still normal snowman, but then, like, if it's a long shot, but then when they get to a close-up, like, he blinks and breathes and, like, moves his face. Like, he isn't perfectly still all the time.
It just seems
so
like
someone should have noticed something.
Seems like a no-brainer that, like, the conflict of they can't see him talking to the snowman, like, it's set up, people in the town are near there, and just, like, nobody cares about it.
They almost set up the snowplow as, like, a bad thing or an obstacle, and then just kind of just exists.
It's a kid's movie.
Yeah.
Snowplow is the villain.
Yeah, snow day, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's your ranking for this film and rating against Spazfire? Or rating for this film and ranking against Spazfire? I don't know why I always get that mixed up.
I mean, my ranking for this is 5 experiences out of 5, as everybody had a different experience making this movie. nobody had two, you know, similar runs on this film. And ranking against the Pacifier, Pacifier's better. Like, and I'm not a big Pacifier guy. but I would much rather watch that movie again than this one.
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely worse than the Pacifier. I give this, I don't know, 2 minutes in the penalty box out of 5. You put it on in the background during Christmas time and you go, there's snow on the ground in that movie. I'm in the spirit, I guess.
Yeah, it's also going to be better than the Pacifier for me. I'd give it a half a...
Better than the Pacifier or the Pacifier?
Pacifier's better than it. Give it a half a wooden tree branch hockey stick. Out of a full tree branch hockey stick.
Okay. And now it's time for us to play Fill It Up with Diesel, the segment of the show where we cast Vin Diesel somewhere in this movie. He could be replacing a character, he could be a new character, he could have his own plot line. Where would Vin Diesel go in Jack Frost?
The only way I would see Vin Diesel in this movie is if you cast him as Jack Frost, but not like Vin Diesel from the Pacifier, who, like, is limber and cares and, like, you know, wants to actually be in movies. Like, it needs to be current Vin Diesel, like the roided out, coked out, like,
big
movie star that has one movie left in him and he's just gonna keep on making that movie until he dies. And to have everybody act against that guy,
be interesting.
I think it would make an infinitely more entertaining movie than what they handed in.
I would want to see him wearing that little douchebag hat that Michael Keaton wears throughout this.
Oh, yeah.
It'd be funny. But
it's like a regular-sized hat on Michael Keaton, but
when you put it on the snowman,
it's so small.
It's a little douchebag hat. For me, I'd want to see him as Mac. As much as I like Mark Addy, he could be someone else in the movie. You could make a Max twin brother thing, but I want to see Vin Diesel try to be a surrogate dad to this kid. I want to see Michael Keaton kiss Vin Diesel on the forehead in the very beginning. Just little stupid stuff.
All right.
Yeah.
I'd replace the school bully. Not with a child Vin Diesel, with, like, current age.
Just full size.
50-year-old full size Vin Diesel. Maybe put him in child's clothes.
That would be good.
And then he's just there And nobody, like, the other kids are acknowledging him as just another kid. It's like a la Benchwarmers, I am 12.
And the hockey coach is the only one who's like, what the fuck is this kid doing? We're getting beat by the Devils because they have a man out there.
That would be great. I would love that movie. Or, if that was a subplot in this movie, of just, like, they have a literal grown man, why are we not beating them? And it's just Vin Diesel just completely destroying everybody.
That'd be fun. There are ways to make this movie fun, but they did not discover that.
Sitting cross-legged in a child's hockey goal. We can't hit it. There's no space.
So thank you so much for coming on, John. Do you have anything you want to plug? Anything you want to tell us about SPR?
Yeah, so I am the co-executive producer on a show called Superhuman Public Radio. I make that with Max Clark, who is really the heart of that show. And also Luke here starred in it. He plays Katmando and a bunch of other characters in this series. And we just had our season finale this week. And, you know, we're going to be going into a post on season 3 pretty soon. So you should check it out.
Cool.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, we'll be sure to let everyone know all about it. As for us, you can follow us anywhere at No Highway Pod, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, all those. You can email us nohighwaypod@gmail.com if you want to yell at us, if you want to be on the show, if you're any of the celebrities that we have needlessly pandered to. If you worked on Jack Frost and you want to give us some dirt, hell yeah. Right. As always, thank you to Ian C. Weber for composing our theme song. The C this week stands for...
Charlie.
Charlie. Is that... do we ever know what his middle name actually is? We can talk about that later. You can follow the link in our show description to hear all of Ian's cool stuff. Next week, we... That's right. So this is coming out on the 19th of December. So you got two things coming up in the next week. You've got our Santa Clausathon on Sunday in 5 days, where we are going to have watched the 3 Santa Claus movies and the 2 seasons of the TV show that came out. It's definitely going to be something. And then after that, it's our last Snow Highway Option episode, where we're playing with the toys that were under the tree as we talk about Transformers Revenge of the Fallen. So tune in for a movie that I gave a standing ovation to in 2009, because I loved it.
2009. Dang. All right.
But yeah, thank you all very much for listening. Please remember to review... Give us a review, subscribe to us, follow us, whatever it is called now. Tell your friends about us. But tune in next week for all that fun stuff. But for now, for No Highway Option, I've been Connor.
And I've been Luke.
And who have you
And been? I've been John.
And as always, these have been all of our opinions. And if you didn't agree with us, that is too bad, because it's our way. No Highway Option.